This is Emotional Connection with Raphael Kushner. It's my personal and professional passion to help people access their emotions directly. This simple but rare process, for those who master it, creates greater wisdom, success, and most of all, well-being. Each week on this podcast, I share a recent session recorded with a client facing a particular challenge. This gives you, the listener, a chance to see the process of emotional connection in an up-close, unedited fashion, applied to practical, everyday concerns. Whenever you get the gist of the issue at hand and want to dive into the process itself, feel free to skip ahead in the podcast. For more information on this work, please visit my website, livingthequestions.org. This is also where you can reach me to ask questions and provide feedback, schedule your own private session by phone, get listings of upcoming events in your area, and learn about our unique year-long program. Once again, that's livingthequestions, plural, .org. Thank you so much for joining us. And now, enjoy the podcast. Hello again. We are here today with Carol. Carol, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
And you and I have been talking a little bit about an issue of yours, but really not of yours, of, I would say, you know, many, many, many people, which is clutter. And today, what I'm hoping that we can do is use the lens of emotional connection to try to get to the bottom of it a little bit. So, you know, I'm aware that there are lots of, you know, books and teachings about how to organize your life, how to get organized, how to clear your clutter. There's even a book called Clear Your Clutter with Feng Shui. And I know, because this has been a lifelong issue for you, that you've done a lot of exploring and work around it. And so we're not going to be in the realm of, you know, advice giving or practical solution explorations. We're going to be looking at what's beneath the situation. Does that sound good?
That's, yes, I agree. I know every technique.
Okay, good. So why don't we start there, and if you can just tell me briefly what has happened for you in the past when you have tried all of the good techniques.
Well, one incident sticks in my mind, and it happened in a house that I moved out of 10 years ago, so it was probably, you know, 11, 12 years ago, and it had a large laundry room in the basement that had a nice big wide counter like a workbench, and I had some boxes there, big boxes with clothes and I don't know what else, and then there was piles of stuff, so the whole bench was filled, and I decided I was going to clean that up, and I started going through those things, and I don't know, maybe it was an anxiety attack, because I had this overwhelming feeling of being anxious. It was foreboding, and it was, I was scared, I felt threatened, very anxious, and I just had to quit and go upstairs. That's one of the things, one of the types of things that can happen. Another is that I just get overwhelmed. The job gets to be, you know, a room gets so bad that I just can't even figure out where to start, so I don't start at all.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's go back for a moment to the first story that you told. I want to make sure that I heard that correctly. So you were getting ready to move, and so you had a big surface with a lot of stuff all over it. Is that right?
I was not getting ready to move. I was just making another one of my attempts to do some organizing in my home.
Okay, but this was when you were in a different home. And
yeah.
And so you kind of got a bunch of the stuff out there as if it was going to be organized.
No, it was already there.
Okay, so you didn't you weren't involved in an organizing project. You just saw the mess, and you went about starting to see if you could bring some order to it, and that's when you had the anxiety that you were describing.
Yes.
Okay. And at the time, and I know it was a long ago, this isn't especially important, but I'm just wondering, did you notice that there was any content to the anxiety, meaning sometimes anxiety is free-floating. I don't know why I'm anxious. And other times there's anxiety where I'm feeling anxious about something in particular.
No, I think it was more free-floating. It wasn't as if I was feeling like, oh, if I get rid of this stuff, then this will happen or that bad thing will happen. This was just, oh, my gosh, I can't do this. I can't do this. I can't do this.
So really, in a way, the first story sounds connected to the second story because, oh, my God, I can't do this.
Yeah.
Quality of overwhelm to it.
Yeah.
Okay. And so what seems to happen, as you've described so far, is that things get to the point where they are too much, they are overwhelming, and so a kind of a switch goes off, and, you know, it's an easier choice or seemingly a better choice in the moment to say, I'm just not going to deal with this.
Right,
okay. Now, I'm almost certain that all of the techniques that you've read about or that you've tried are somehow about helping you so that you don't get to that place, right? In other words, like that things don't get piled up to the point where they are overwhelming. Is that accurate?
That's probably true. For instance, when I get my mail in, to go through the mail, I endeavor to, okay, this goes into recycling, this goes into the shredder, this goes into the bill pile, and make sure that every bit of mail is sorted and put somewhere. But that doesn't always happen. You know, I come home, I have another agenda, the mail lays there, and then it becomes part of the problem.
Right. So that's kind of what I was leading towards, is the techniques are practical. They make sense. You're not going to be overwhelmed by too much clutter if you don't let it get to that point. And
right.
Yet what you find is that over time, usually those techniques, you don't apply them, you know, fully enough or consistently enough, and then there you're right back at the place of overwhelm.
Exactly.
Okay. So my first question for you is, what do you know already about what keeps you from following those techniques? In other words, like I said, we're not going to get into, well, maybe you should do it this way instead of that way.
Right.
But with something like the mail sorting, you know, it's a really good example you gave. You said, you know, sometimes it doesn't happen. Sometimes I have another agenda. And so my question for you is, in that moment, you know, you have a sense that the best thing for you to do, because you have this issue around clutter, is to do the sorting. Something happens that keeps you from doing it. Is it always something different, or is there a common quality to what gets in the way?
No, it's just something different. It's the dog. I just came in the door, and the dog needs to be fed now. I need to go to the bathroom. I'm tired. I need to sit for a while. No, I don't discriminate. I use all kinds of excuses.
Okay. And so it's interesting that you call them excuses because, you know, I'm not in a place to judge whether they are or not. It sounds like you think that they are.
Well, I'm very frustrated, and at this point, they all seem like excuses.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that's, I guess, you could say that I'm putting a judgment on myself.
Yeah.
Around all of this.
So let's say that, you know, the dog needs to be fed, or you need to go to the bathroom, or you need to rest, or whatever. The next thing that happens is that you don't return to it.
Ah, true.
Yeah, so let's say, here's an example. You come in and, you know, the dog needs some attention. So you realize, okay, I've got a handful of mail. I haven't sorted through it yet. So you, you know, put it down on the dinner table. And, the idea is that you're going to get to it, you know, as soon as you're done with the dog. And you're certainly going to get to it before you eat dinner because it's in the way. It's showing you that it's there to, you know, be a priority. Now, that might sound like a suggestion, but I'm not actually raising it as a suggestion. I mean, if it helped, that'd be fine. But I'm asking you, is there something you notice that keeps you from actually revisiting, you know, getting to it as soon as the thing that's in the way gets taken care of?
No.
do you forget?
I can't say that there's anything in particular. I could say I forget, but that's easy. I mean, excuse me, I'm going to take a sip of tea.
Sure.
I don't have any sense around what it is that goes on that...
The question there is...
Me forget totally about the mail then, once I've done whatever I thought was a priority. Because I just don't think about it again.
What I wanted to clarify was, is it that you don't think about it again, or, as is the case with some people, that it's there in the back of your mind and you kind of keep pushing it away?
I think, for the example of bringing in the mail, I just don't think about it. Now, when it comes to things like cleaning up or organizing existing clutter, that's always on my mind, and I just push it out of the way.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you're an equal opportunity choice maker. Sometimes you forget.
Yeah.
Sometimes you put it out of your mind. Okay.
Yeah. The new stuff I is more like that. Oh, I forget. Mm-hmm. But then when all of a sudden I look around and here there's so much stuff piled on the dining room table that I could not begin to eat there, then it's definitely on my mind, and it's just something that is always there that I'm frustrated and don't know how to deal with.
Right. Okay. And you also wrote to me when we first communicated about this issue. There's something interesting that around the fact that you have a rental property and you find yourself able to keep it up to date and clutter free in a way that you can't do, you know, for your own personal life. Is that right?
That's true. If somebody moves out and leaves a whole bunch of stuff, I know exactly what to do. And I go in there and I get rid of their stuff through various means. I don't just call a dumpster because I believe in recycling, reusing. I make sure a charity gets the usable stuff. I recycle and I can do the cleaning myself. I don't do that so much anymore, but I make sure that it gets done, and if it's not quite up to my standards, then I finish the job. So, yes, I'm very good at a one-time thing like that. It's the ongoing keeping up my own house that's the difficulty. And I find that to be a pattern in other activities. I do a fair amount of volunteer work, and generally what I want to do is give me a one-time project, I will take care of it. Do not give me a long-term obligation. Mm-hmm. I don't want to take on some kind of long-term obligation. Of course, keeping up a house, keeping up one's life is a long-term obligation.
What do you find, unpleasant or, unwanted about a long-term obligation?
The responsibility.
Mm-hmm. And what about the responsibility is difficult or, unpleasant?
Well, maybe that's what brings on the anxiety. I don't know. Years ago, the therapist I used to see, we determined that I was pretty much born into this life with a lot of responsibility on my shoulders that no young child should have to take on.
Mm-hmm.
So, maybe it goes back to that. I don't know that I don't throw another responsibility on me. I'm a very responsible person in every other aspect of my life. I'm responsible in job situations. I'm very responsible about my money. I'm very responsible about following through on obligations. But this is one responsibility that I managed to rebel against.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, what does in this situation, maybe in particular, what is? I'm going to ask a question that's going to sound maybe sort of obvious, but I want you to answer it in your own way so that we can kind of get to the bottom of it.
Okay.
What is the for you negative result of having, you know, that extra responsibility?
The first thing that came into my head, Raphael, and this is not consciously thought of, it just came into my head, is it's too much on my shoulders.
Okay, so it almost has a visceral sense of weighing you down.
Yeah.
Right, okay. Now, I want to come back to that because it's really important, but I also want to tie two things together, or at least explore how they might be connected. You said that, you know, you generally found yourself to be pretty good with, you know, one-time clear-outs, not as welcoming of, you know, the consistent management.
But then
you also told me earlier that you have experiences like the one that happened in your house so many years ago where it would be appropriate to do a kind of a big clear-out. You know, like what was all that stuff that was piled, you know, in your basement. But in your own case, the big clear out, you know, created some anxiety and you weren't able to follow through with that. So am I getting that right?
But for me in my own home, I think the big clear out is just part of a whole vicious cycle that's going to start all over again, I think is how I look at it. You know, you made your bed today, and now you got to make it again tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow. So what's the point?
I see. So even if you were doing a big clear out in your own home, it doesn't give you that sense of one-time job, well done, move on. Because
no.
Like with the rental property, someone else is going to move in and make their bed every day. But at your house, you know, all you did was clear out stuff so that new responsibilities could arise.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So can you just tell me a little bit more about that piece that you looked at some years ago in therapy, you know, the nature of the responsibilities that you had to shoulder, you know, to use that word since it's kind of come up for you, that you had to shoulder that weren't appropriate for you at a young age?
Well, you know, to get into the really, you know, nitty-gritty psychological look at this, we decided, I mean, I didn't need help. This made sense to me. I was born 19 years after my only sibling. So to some people, oh, yeah, she was a mistake way back then. You know, abortion was not an option, so they had this kid. But in reality, my belief is that I was born, came out of the womb with the responsibility of taking care of my parents' emotional needs rather than the other way around, and was probably instrumental in keeping their marriage together.
So, I mean, what I want to make clear that some of this information is very helpful to us, although, you know, we're not going to delve into it, and I want to let you know, and, you know, in case you're wondering, you know, what this isn't going to turn into that kind of therapy session, but just to add a little bit to that so that it has a fullness and it's present with us in the way that it needs to be. How did it happen for you? What do you remember about that emotional caretaking? In other words, at an early age, I'm sure it was, you know, pre-verbal, you can't put a lot to it. But at the point where you can put a lot to it, what was the nature of the caretaking that you needed to do?
What I can remember, I was quite a bit older, and coming to the realization that there were supposed to be two adults in the household, and my mother and I were those two. And I was probably adolescent or pre-adolescent at that point. I can't think of a specific thing. I mean, my father went to work every day, but in terms of his attitude on life and his expectations, mine as a child were more realistic about what life's going to do for you or to you or provide you than what my father's were. So I was the one that became more of, I don't want to say confidant, that's not really correct, more of a companion to my mother, I think.
So how would you describe in just a few sentences what your father's unrealistic expectations of life were?
He seemed to think life owed him something. He was disgruntled. He, you know, he should have had this better and that better, and I do have to say also, you know, this was, my father was born in 1904. I came along really late in life, and he probably would have benefited from today's medications for depression.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think my dad spent most of his life during my life clinically depressed.
Uh-huh.
And so that may be what I'm getting at here is that one member of the household, and he was hospitalized twice during my lifetime for depression and given electroshock therapy. Mm-hmm. So what I may be saying is I grew up in a household where one party was mentally ill, one adult.
Okay, gotcha. And was there a fallout from that for you? I mean, I heard you say that emotional needs, you know, you were there to provide, but were there other ways that you kind of had to pick up the slack for what he wasn't able to deal with?
Well, yeah. I guess this would tie in, and it just came into my mind to mention it because I don't think of these two things, and I don't think of the clutter in the same context of what I'm going to bring up now. But since we're talking about my father, he sexually abused me when I was a young child, mm-hmm. and what that might have to do with what we're talking about today, I don't know, but that's certainly a place where I picked up the slack because I had to hide the family secret.
Mm-hmm. And so without going into the details of that, it was at an age where, you know, you have a pretty clear memory of it?
Yeah.
And it lasted for a significant amount of time that it was a kind of an ongoing secret, or was it, you know, a brief thing that then just became the secret?
It happened twice when I was like maybe five, and then when I was eight and nine, it happened half a dozen times at least. I'm a little foggy on that, mm-hmm. on that part of the deal, and it was not, to the best of my knowledge, intercourse, thank God, but and it took me well into adulthood before I realized that what had happened was sexual abuse. Mm-hmm. But that was you know, occurrence rate and when and incident. And
yeah, yeah. Okay, well, the reason that it is usually helpful just to spend a little bit of time re-exploring some of these kinds of things is because of a simple way of looking at all of this, which is that we don't have to go looking into the past, because whatever of the past is relevant to us is here in the present. And, you know, when you have an intractable problem like dealing with clutter, and you know that you're capable of putting techniques into place, but you don't do them, then, you know, it is really likely that you're carrying something with you from the past that's still in the present. And so we don't, you know, have to go kicking around to, you know, excavate the past, but it's more to illuminate how it's here, you know.
Okay, makes sense.
Part. And in your situation, there's one thing that I want to just highlight before we kind of come back to you and your everyday, and that is that you talked about your father and his clinical depression. And, of course, depression means, you know, what it sounds like, a pushing down, a weightedness. And that is also there in your description of, you know, why you often want to avoid ongoing responsibility. You know, it's a weight on your shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
It's also there in your description of, oh, my God, I clean it up, and then I've just got to do it all over again.
Yeah.
It's almost like, you know, I can't get free. I can't feel light because there's always something, you know, that is demanded of me. And
right.
Why even bother if it's just this endless cycle of day in and day out? I've got to use it and clean it up, use it and clean it up, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so to me, the way those dots are connected and the way they bring us back, you know, to you in this, you know, time of your life and in this present moment is that there is a somewhat depressive quality to just how you've dealt with, you know, kind of ongoing daily responsibilities. And to a large degree, it was, you know, imprinted or passed on, you know, energetically and emotionally through that connection to your father. So it's not as if you're clinically depressed or need to be hospitalized or electroshock, but it's as if the reverberations of that kind of depression, you know, still live within you. Does that resonate to some degree?
Yes, it really does. And it also, what popped into my head was, it's a way for me to stay connected to my father in a way that I, you know, and a connection I never had.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a really interesting and sophisticated association that you're making, because a lot of times what we do is we look for what you've probably heard before is called a secondary gain. You know, what am I getting out of this?
Absolutely.
Even
gotta be some gain to it.
Right. And so what you're saying is that there's a way that, you know, you get to sort of stay even just, you know, on a kind of invisible and just energetic level, connect. You get to have a link to your father in a way that you didn't have it. But and sometimes those kinds of realizations are, you know, they're really interesting ahas. And, you know, if we're lucky, sometimes they lead to a shift. You know, you might realize, oh, I'm ready to sever that kind of connection in you know, and replace it with something that, you know, serves me better in
right.
my current time. But then we still come to the how, you know, and that's what I want to look at for you and with you, because
okay.
there's a way that there's something that's happening if we get really microscopic in those moments of what's the use,
mm-hmm.
that is causing you to kind of click off or causing a part of you to go to sleep a little bit. And so the result is that kind of depressive moment, and what you might otherwise have energy for in that moment, you know, you just can't get to, and so it piles up. In other words, it's not the task, you know, of sorting the mail or making the bed that's really the issue. It's that as you face that task, something happens in you that makes that task feel like it's just too much or that it's not worth it.
Yeah.
Okay, so that makes a little bit of sense at least so far?
Absolutely.
Okay. And I want to just present a counterpoint to that so you can get a sense of what I mean. If you felt energized and uplifted in a given moment and you have to make the bed or even strip the bed, it could be done conceivably with a sense of lightheartedness. It could be joyful. You could, you know, be enjoying the colors, you know, the breezes from flapping the sheets, the hospital corners and their, you know, and their nice, you know, clean lines, and there could be some nice music playing, and it could actually be. I'm not telling you that it should be this for you, but I'm just asking you to imagine another circumstance where, for another person or for you in another state, that same activity could actually be enjoyable.
Oh, I can imagine that because I know other people experience that.
Right.
I know people who get a lot of satisfaction. They love to clean house, and I know people not only that love to clean house but do it when they're upset because it brings them peace, even if it doesn't make them not a thing of happiness but a thing of peace.
Right.
To do it.
Right.
So yeah, I intellectually I can accept that there's certainly other ways of feeling about this. I haven't figured out how to translate that into me.
Right, right. Well, that's all I was asking you up front was just to see if you could, you know, imagine that other possibility. It sounds like, you know, you can imagine it fully well.
Yes.
And that's all that mattered. Okay. So when depression isn't, you know, biochemical in some huge and obvious way, it usually really just is, you know, to reiterate what I mentioned before, a kind of pushing down. And so the way that we liberate that energy, well, and let me just add one other thing too, that whatever we're pushing down, all it wants is to come through, to be felt. So that in its being felt, it can be released or it can let go on its own. It knows how to do all of that. And so the more that we say no to that experience, the more forceful it becomes, trying to get our attention, trying to get through. And when that happens, we have to put more and more of our own life energy into keeping the lid on. You know, the pressure builds.
Yes.
So therefore, the depression intensifies. And one real clear reason for it is because all or much of our life force unconsciously is going into this keeping the lid on process. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. Excuse me. Yes, it definitely. Yeah, it definitely does. I was thinking of something else, but I, in regards to that, but I already lost the train of thought. So.
Okay, all right. So what we want to do, we've set the stage really well for this, is that we want to try to see if you can, instead of keeping the lid on, if you can take the lid off and kind of dive into what is beneath, what, you know, has been longing for your attention. And in order to do that, I want to just spend a couple moments figuring out, you know, where our best launching point is. So I get that there are these everyday experiences like not getting back to the mail, and I get that every once in a while there's a big overwhelm like the one that you told me to start out with. And there's also this experience of, you know, shouldering the pressure that comes from people wanting you to take on, you know, lengthy roles. Now, does one of those scenarios or something we haven't talked about yet most fully evoke for you that quality of, oh, it's just never going to end. It's just way too much.
Well, that's really hard for me to pin down. As you're saying that, all I'm thinking about is being in my house right now and thinking I'm never going to get this. I'm never going to have the kind of tidy home that I want. And that seems to be the picture. You know, people say, well, you just have to start at one corner and one, but yeah, I know. And the one thing that came to my mind that I lost, it came back, and that is using the back to the mail. One of the issues is that I'll have something that I need to keep and I have no idea what to do with it. I can't figure out where should I put it. and I stop right there. And I, you know, and then it lays on the sofa or, and to me, that's, it's ridiculous. I'm an intelligent person. I don't know, you know, and so obviously it's just more and more that I have to kind of push down. But, as far as what you just asked me,
well, I'm gonna
I got nothing out of it. I mean,
I'm gonna stop you because you actually did exactly what I asked without realizing it.
Okay.
Because what you really shared with me is that the sort of gestalt of that experience is right there. You know, as you look around your house, it kind of all comes together in this idea that it's just never going to be any different, right?
Yes.
So I'm gonna ask you to do a little experiential. Exploration with me.
Okay.
And it kind of goes like this. I want you to just let that idea be there as if it's kind of echoing around you and inside of you. It's never going to be any different. You're always going to be living in a house, no matter how much you do, no matter how much you try, no matter how many books you read or talks like this that you have. You're just going to be surrounded by crap. And it's going to grow and grow and grow until, you know, really not only is the question what's the point of cleaning it up, but even what's the point of doing anything because, you know, it's sort of burying you, you know, at the same point, at the same time. So I'm purposely accentuating it. So I want you to allow that to kind of go through you. It's never going to get any better. It's actually going to get worse. It's going to weigh on me more and more and more. And as you feel into that, turn your attention to your body and notice, you know, what sensations first come into your awareness. What do you notice first off?
I'm sitting all slumped over.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so inside, is there a place, you know, is it your stomach? Is it your throat? Is it an all over feeling?
Yeah, it's my gut.
Say that again.
It's my gut.
Okay. So see if you can bring your attention for a few moments right there to that place in your gut where you have the most heaviness. And let your attention for a few moments just stay there and let your intention be to be wide awake and alert in this place that usually puts you to sleep. And be a gentle observer of that big weight. And just notice for a few moments. I'll be mostly silent. Just notice whatever arises as you let your intention be curious, checking it out, seeing as much as you can about its very nature. So just take a moment and kind of breathe into that area, create some space, and as I say, just gently notice whatever's there. Just kind of surf the waves of whatever is there with your attention. Just keep noticing. The quality of this heaviness. Just a few more moments. Stay with it. So what do you notice?
Not a whole lot. However, my brain never stops, and I've been experiencing some physical problems, and I'm right now being sent to a rheumatologist because they do, if you have an inflammatory process, which I have, and that just adds extra weight to the body, giving me the feeling I'm physically manifesting in my body.
Right.
What I'm manifesting around me, which even makes it more urgent that I resolve this, whatever's going on. My gut calmed down during that time. That I know.
So wait a minute. I want to come back around to what you first said, and I want to be kind of a gentle challenger for you because the first thing you said was that I asked you what you noticed. You said not a whole lot.
Yeah.
And then you also said that, you know, your mind doesn't stop. So the first thing I want to check in with you is, it sounds like what you're saying is that you allowed your attention as best as you could to stay in the gut, but you also noticed that what came up when you did that was a kind of stream of ongoing thoughts. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. So you were noticing pretty clearly that, you know, your mind was working and your mind was also kind of pulling you out of the situation. So I think you were doing some really good noticing, even if it wasn't specifically, you know, about that heaviness. That's number one. So
okay.
Good job on that. Number two is you also noticed that it calmed down. So even if you weren't able to stay as connected as you might have liked, the result of those, you know, 15 or 20 seconds was some greater degree of ease right there in your belly. Is that
mm-hmm.
true?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, good. So that's just something to mark. Like, let's put a big, you know, check mark by that, that your attention placed upon that heaviness caused some loosening, some opening, some sense of freedom. Okay, is that fair to say?
Yeah.
Okay. So we're gonna build on that, but that's a very good foundation. So I want to ask you to go in and do the same thing again, and it doesn't have to be to that spot in your belly. I'll re-stimulate the point that we're making for you to explore inside of yourself. But if it turns out that the sensations are gathered somewhere else or they move somewhere else, there's no right or wrong. And you're not even supposed to try hard to find them. They'll come to you, and your job is to keep following them very closely with your attention. And the other thing that I want to add is that if you notice the thoughts arising, you know, my mind never stops, to use your words, this time see if every single time that a thought comes, rather than opposing it or being concerned about it or being pulled away by it, you just kind of inwardly bow to it. Thank you for sharing, and now I'm going to go back to this job of paying attention to what's going on in my body. So that if, you know, we do it for another 20 seconds, and 10 times there's a thought that arises, and 10 times you just meet it with that kind of welcoming equanimity, and then return to your physical attentiveness, that would be perfect.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Uh-huh.
Because even people who are very skilled at doing this are constantly following that instruction. They're going back from their thinking into their body. It's not, you know, kind of an uninterrupted presence. We're just not really built that way for the most part. So, just take another breath and let that breath bring you into your body. Let your attention surf whatever sensations come up. And in particular around this issue that, you know, you're just weighed down. You're weighed down physically now from your health concerns. You're weighed down by this ever-expanding clutter around you. And it doesn't even make a difference if you cleaned it all up today, because tomorrow is just going to be more crap piling on and piling on and piling on. So just start surfing with your attention. Just stay with it. Keep noticing whatever comes up. Keep going for a few more moments. So what do you notice this time?
Well, as soon as you said take a deep breath, all of a sudden I'm sitting with my legs crossed on an office chair, and all of a sudden my calves spoke up
mm-hmm.
and started hurting.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had to keep saying, yeah, thank you for your input, go away now. I didn't say go away now, but that was kind of where I was, what I was feeling is, in terms of my thoughts. So I wasn't quite as welcoming as intended. But then I did get a sharp pain kind of in that belly button, or a little below the belly button. I thought, oh yeah, there's still that physical stuff going on in the belly.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, moving around in the body.
Yeah. So you're doing great, and I just want to check in on something. I know you were doing the thank you for sharing piece. Did you do that just for thoughts, or did you do that when you got that pain in your calves as well?
No, I just did it for thoughts.
Okay, good. So when that pain arose in your calves, you just stayed with that, and then as you were doing that, suddenly some pangs arose in your gut again. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, good. So I'm going to ask you to do it one more time.
Okay.
And this time, not even with my re-stimulation. This is just you turning your attention to your body, being as gentle as you can with those thoughts, you know, and as gentle as you can with your awareness. And I want you to imagine that your attention is almost as if it's a soothing kind of petting quality. So, like, let's say that there was a cat or a dog, you know, right by your side, and you were just gently stroking its fur, and, you know, if it was a cat, it would be purring just from that attention. So just imagine that the way that you're paying attention to whatever you feel in your body, whether it's an itch or an ow or something pleasant, whatever it is, that your attention is just soothing it in that way. And just spend a few more moments with whatever comes up. Just begin to notice. Just bring that gentle quality of noticing to whatever you experience anywhere it arises in your body. Letting those thoughts go. You can breathe into any area of sensation to help keep things moving. And just keep going for a few more moments. Good. So what was happening this time around?
Well, I had sensations in different areas of my body, but all I kept thinking was petting like a kitty cat.
Mm-hmm.
And they just kept kind of dissipating.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, in terms of, you know, open and relaxed versus, you know, tense and restricted, where would you say your body is on that scale right now?
Well, that's interesting because, you know, I'm looking at my own posture and it's much more open than it was. I think my body is more content and more comfortable. Mm-hmm. I actually positioned my feet. My legs are short, so without a footstool, I'm often kind of uncomfortable, but without thinking about it, I positioned my feet on a couple of the legs of this office chair. You know, it's got the little pedestal type base on it, swivel thing, and which makes my legs much more comfortable, and I'm sitting up more, you know, straighter, and I'm not experiencing any discomfort in any particular area.
Okay, good. So that's that's the next thing that we want to kind of put a big check mark by, that by using your attention in this way, by tuning into your body, there was a natural opening and relaxing and easing of your energy flow, and you're reporting that, you know, very specifically, and so I'm really glad to hear that. I want to check in on one last scale, and that is on a scale of, you know, energized on one end and, you know, completely lethargic on the other end, where do you find yourself?
Well, that's an interesting question because due to these health issues, there's been a lot of lethargy to deal with here lately. But I'm feeling pretty good right now. I'm feeling, I'm ready to tackle the day, and that's not always the case. And I feel more energized and alert, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed than before we started this conversation.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that, you know, let's put another check mark there. And, you know, I'm really glad that you shared that. And, you know, for anybody who's listening, you know, to what you're saying right now, at some point in the future, it almost might sound like, you know, I gave you that script, right? But I didn't. We've never spoken about this before.
No.
And the reason that I'm joking around about that is because what you've demonstrated in a few short, you know, experiments is that by bringing a gentle quality of attention to what arises in your physical body, you go from, you know, a contracted feeling, a depressive feeling, a weighted down feeling like the one you were describing that you carry often, into one that, you know, you described as more open, more relaxed, and even, you know, to use your words, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, and ready to tackle the day. Now, that sounds like somebody who would think, you know, make the bed, big deal. You know, I'll put on the TV or listen to music or maybe even just, you know, be with this feeling of energy as I am making the bed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not asking you to go make the bed, but can you at least in this moment imagine how making the bed in this energetic state would be such a lighter task than in the other?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So this is, you know, almost all that you need to know, almost all you need to have experienced from our session today. But I want to, and I'm going to highlight it and then add one more thing. The highlighting goes like this. From now on, whenever you're faced with a task and you notice that you feel weighted down or overwhelmed or just don't want to do it, don't try to force yourself to do it. And don't, you know, if you can help it, just, you know, push it out of your awareness. Instead, look straight into the eyes of the task, you know, whether it's sorting mail or cleaning up a whole room. Look at it directly and then turn your attention to your body in this way and let yourself stay with whatever sensations arise until you come to a place of enough energy that you can really bring it in a positive way to the task at hand. And it's going to sound strange to say this, but if you don't get to that place, don't do the chore. Stay with the experience as long as you need to, whether it's 2 minutes or 5 minutes or maybe sometimes it's 10 minutes, and let yourself be with what arises, because that's going to continue to clear out whatever, you know, has been, you know, pressurized deep within you, so that this state of being, you know, bright-eyed, as you described it, is going to become much more common for you, almost like a foundation state as opposed to something, you know, rare and special that you get to experience. Now, as I say that, you know, you might think, well, then I'll never get anything done. But the truth is you're not really getting that stuff done now, right?
Yeah.
And if 6 out of 10 times you got to tackle what was in front of you with some degree of lightness and enthusiasm and did it for 10 or 15 minutes, you'd be so far ahead of the game. And if on those other 4 times you went within and you surfed your physical and emotional experience and it took you someplace else that was more important than the clutter, you know, shedding some tears, having more insight about, you know, the issues we were talking about before regarding your family, noticing a place in your life where there's been other emotions that have been bottled up and that are ready to come through. If that was happening, you know, the other 4 times out of the 10, then you're a big winner all the way around. And
yeah,
ultimately you're going to get, you know, more and more efficient at working with the clutter. So that's the main instruction that comes out of this, which is do exactly what we did on the phone, right there in the heat of the moment, so to speak, and don't make an attempt to do any work when you feel weighted down until that sense of weightedness has lifted. And like I say, if it doesn't lift, then stay with it if you can and take it wherever it's supposed to take you, because it just means there's something else that you really need to be experiencing right then.
Okay.
So that's instruction number one. Is that clear?
Yes.
Does it sound, you know, is there some hopefulness in that for you?
Yeah, there actually is, that I can envision rather than, because there's lots of things that that I do that could be construed as work or not exactly pleasant tasks that I enjoy doing. Mm-hmm. And I know other people enjoy doing the cleanup around the house. So, yes, I can envision that that is a possibility for me, too.
Okay, good. And so sometimes there's a mystery to all of this. Like, we don't know why that depressive quality got hooked up to clutter, you know,
yeah. As
opposed to something else. You know, like you said, you enjoy some things that other people don't. We don't even have to figure out that mystery. We just know that that's where it lives within you. And if you apply these practices, you're going to be fine and you're going to start to see a shift. Now, if you don't see a shift, then email me and let's talk more. You know, I always extend that invitation to people. You know, if we need to get on the phone and course correct for in terms of this, or find out, you know, where's the stopping point that you need a little bit of extra support and guidance to move through, you know, I would always encourage you to do that. I'm just going to intend that you're going to be playing with this, you're going to be exploring it, you're going to be having a good time. If I don't hear from you, it's because it's going really well. And if it's not going really well, I hope you'll take me up, you know, on my invitation and be in touch and let me know. Does that sound good?
I will do that.
Okay. Now, there are a couple last things. I mentioned that I was going to add one piece. Before I get to that last piece, I'm going to throw in something a little different. I'm curious about this. Would it feel better, neutral, or worse for you when it came to some of the big clutter removal projects that you might have in front of you, if you had somebody helping you do it?
Oh, yeah, it's much better.
Okay. Because, you know, one of the hallmarks of your early experience was having to take care of other people and meet their needs when it was supposed to be the other way around, and that's something that's really gotten, you know, deeply embedded within you. And so it occurred to me, you know, on an intuitive level, that it might be hard for you sometimes to give yourself that gift. But if you could just ask someone, you know, who cares about you, or even not think twice if you've got the means to pay someone, you know, even you know, an intern or a younger kind of person doesn't need that much money, just to be there to assist you, to let yourself have the experience of being fully assisted and tended to, which is the one that's less common for you and that doesn't feel as natural to you. But that it sounded like when I first, you know, proposed it, that there was a strong yes to that.
Yeah, and I do have a woman who comes over and helps me clean, because as much as I don't, you know, kind of live in the clutter, I do not like dirt. So she will do, you know, she will clean the sink, the toilet, the tub, the floors, that sort of thing. But I, while she's doing that, I work with her and I move clutter around so that, and put things away so that she can do the, you know, the nitty gritty of the cleaning. But, I had even thought of that, a friend of mine who is not able physically to help with the cleaning, to just have her come over and sit with me and give me direction. That would be comforting, you know.
Right.
Is just, yep, to have another person there that will keep me from getting distracted and would be able to say, because my cleaning lady that does come when she, and she has another job, so she's not available really as often as I'd like, you know, she'll say to me, well, what do you think about having this over here? And I'm, oh, yeah, that's a great idea. Let's do that. So, yes, it's very helpful to have someone else present, although I did think about hiring one of these people who's supposed to organize your home for you, and that just brings on all kinds of anxiety.
Right. So, first of all, you hit the nail on the head when you said that, you know, the idea I was mentioning to you might be comforting, you know, because I think that that comfort, that nurturing is like, you know, soul medicine to you based on what you were telling me.
Uh-huh.
And so it's great to, it would be great, a second kind of instruction to, whenever possible, as you're meeting the big clutter issues head on, to have that kind of comfort and support there. And even comfort and support to help you do what we were doing. So, you know, if your friend, you know, who can't physically help you clean was over there with you and you're working on the clutter and she notices, hey, you know what, we've just managed to spend 20 minutes without really decluttering at all. We've talked about other things. So, you know, do you want to sit down, take a moment, turn your attention to your body and notice what's there, and let's not go back to clutter work until you start feeling bright-eyed and bushy-tailed again. So she can assist you in the way that I assisted you, and then you are getting reinforcement, you know, from without to help you do this inner work. So that would be instruction number two, and I'm glad that it just kind of naturally fits with what you were already thinking.
Okay.
So then here's the last piece of the puzzle, and it sounds like it may be like just almost too simple or wordplay or something like that, but the most important thing for you to recognize is that the only work that you ever have to do in the realm of clutter or in any realm, but let's look at clutter right now because that's where you've got the block. The only work you ever need to do is what needs to be done in this very moment. So, you know, every time that we tell ourselves a story about the endless tasks, the repetitive tasks, what we're going to have to do tomorrow and the next day and the next day and the next day, it's all made up. What I mean is, you know, I could be dead tomorrow. So could you. I mean,
yeah.
We have no idea what we have to do tomorrow. And we don't have to do tomorrow's work ever today. We don't even have to do the next hour's work in this hour. All we need to do is the work that is asked of us in this very moment. So sometimes it can be an additional liberation, a great liberation, to just realize that. So, you know what, this mail that I'm looking at right now, this recycling that I have to take out to the bigger bins, that is bumming me out because it's bringing up a story of infinite recycling. Well, thank you for that lovely story, but that's not the experience I have right now. All I'm really being asked to do is lift up this can, open the door, take it out to the bins. And the more that we recognize that all we have to do is what we have to do right now, I mentioned it as liberating, but another way of saying it that is in direct connection to what you've been sharing is it lightens the load. I mean, it literally takes the weight off. So do you think in your case, just instinctively as you hear that, that might be, you know, I'll just add a little extra help?
Yeah, and I think that it could work like an affirmation for me. The more, you know, the more you repeat things, the more they become yours.
Mm-hmm.
So I suspect that is something that I could kind of work into an affirmation that I can use.
Right. I am, you know, you can use your own words, and I encourage you to, but it's something along the lines of I am light and free and energized and able and willing to take care of the specific task that is arising for me right now.
And I'm thinking in terms of thinking of the right now. You know, an affirmation, if I'm starting to feel overwhelmed, is I only have to do the right now.
Perfect. And it's true. You know, and the thing about those responsibilities that, you know, you would always turn down over the long term, I'm totally comfortable with you turning them down, but it's the same issue. It's that you're sensing a weight that is hanging over experience that hasn't ever even happened, and therefore what it's doing is it's making you less present and less energized in this moment right now.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if somebody said to you, you know, you have to go to a meeting for 2 hours every Wednesday for the next year, you think, oh, right? But if that same person called you up and each Wednesday and said, are you free at 7 and could you come to a meeting, maybe most of those times you'd be free at 7 and you'd come to the meeting.
Uh-huh.
So I'm not suggesting that you should do that. Again, I want to reiterate it. But what I'm saying is that our stories about what's to come and how unpleasant it is are stories, and what they serve to do is pull us out of the now and make what we have to do in the now all the more difficult.
Right.
So that's why I love the way that you took the affirmation and just made it kind of more central and essential. I only have to do what is in front of me right now. And something also about I only have to do what is in front of me right now. And if I'm feeling too, if it feels too overwhelming to do, I also know how to take care of myself.
Yeah.
To bring myself back to life with my attention right there on those uncomfortable feelings inside of me. So I'm going to take care of myself before I take care of those surroundings. And really what we're talking about when you're doing that practice of bringing your attention to your body, what we're talking about is self-care. We're talking about loving yourself and nurturing yourself in a way that is very profound and that most of us, you know, haven't learned how to do.
Right. Right.
So we started this conversation with me saying, you know, I'm not going to give you decluttering advice, and I think that I wanted to come back to that point because really what I would share with you, if we, I mean, you know all the points from our conversation, so if we just summarize them very simply, it would be something like, when I am overwhelmed by clutter and can't really do what I need to do, my job is to love myself. And I love myself by paying attention to the feelings that are inside of me and the sensations as well, until that process of accompanying myself in this gentle way brings me to a relaxed, energized state in which then I am ready to tackle what's in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
So it really is, you know, declutter from the inside out. But the key ingredient is that practical, specific, visceral self-care. It, you know, it sounds like at first when someone might hear it, if they hadn't followed our whole conversation, it sounds like it has nothing to do with the clutter. But,
yeah.
You know, it has everything to do with the clutter. So does that sound clear?
Right.
Or do you have any questions or yeah buts about the process, or are you ready to just give it a shot and then, you know, keep me posted?
I'm ready to give it a shot. The only yeah but that I had is that my physical responses were really kind of minor. Mm-hmm. And I guess my hope is then that as I do this, then they may become more obvious until they go away. In other words, that I won't, that I don't use some other unuseful form of, I don't want to say self-care, self-abandonment to suppress the physical part of this.
I think that, you know, sometimes they may be subtle. Sometimes
right.
They may be overwhelming themselves. You know, you're going to go on an adventure and you'll see what happens. And like I said, you know, you'll ask for support when you need it. I hear you saying you're hoping that, you know, they're clear enough and strong enough that you don't somehow find a way to skirt around them. And I honor that request, and I also think, you know, be careful what you ask for, right? Because down the road you might say, yeah, I would have given anything to have, you know, much easier sensations arising like they did on the phone with Raphael. You know, there aren't any guarantees about what's going to come up and when, but what I can promise you is that if you keep your attention there the way you did, whatever needs to come up will.
Okay.
Even if you feel like there's nothing going on.
Okay.
Just keep your attention there on what seems like the nothing going on, And whatever numbness you might be experiencing will slowly start to dissipate, and you'll be right back in touch.
Oh, great. Okay, good.
Yeah, good. So it's been a real pleasure, and thank you so much. And on behalf of, you know, myself, but also all the people who will get a lot from this, and I look forward to the next chapter.
Wonderful. Thank you, Raphael.
All right. Bye-bye now. You've been listening to Emotional Connection with Raphael Kushner. Our theme music is by Stephen Walters. For more information on this work, please visit my website, livingthequestions.org. This is also where you can reach me to ask questions and provide feedback, schedule your own private session by phone, get listings of upcoming events in your area, and learn about our unique year-long program. Once again, that's livingthequestions.org. Thank you for joining us, and here's to emotional connection.